The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
From Master Wu Men's Gateless Gate, Yun Menz says you've missed it, the main case. A student once wanted to ask Master Yun Men a question and started to say, "The light serenely shines over the whole universe." Before she had even finished the first line, Yun Men suddenly interrupted, "Isn't that the poem of Chang Zhou?" The student said, "Yes, it is." Yun Men said, "You've missed it." Later, Master Cixin took up the koan and said, "Now tell me, why has this monk missed it?" Commentary. In this koan, if you can grasp how lofty and unapproachable Yun Men's Zen working is and why the monk missed it, then you can be a teacher in heaven and on earth. In case you are not yet clear about it, you will be unable to save yourself. The poem. Cast a hook into such wild cascades, and whoever's greedy will take the bait. That promise you are, even begin to speak, and it scatters back into ruins. So this weekend during this introductory retreat, we've been exploring and experiencing different forms of traditional practice. And, you know, one of the questions that sometimes comes up is how is, you know, Buddhist meditation or Zazen or breath practice different from other forms of meditation? And to appreciate that meditation within the Buddhist tradition goes back and begins with the Buddha, at least in terms of teaching as Buddha Dharma. And that the meditation, all of the forms of meditation incorporate certain essential elements of what the Buddha said are necessary in order to liberate body and mind. And so he established that as cleaning up our house, so our moral lives, calming our restless sea mind, restless, agitated, distracted, and direct insight, gaining insight. Because the Buddha said that ultimately is what actually frees us. Everything else is good and important and has its integral place, and they all are working together. And different forms of practice can be transformative in different ways, but by their nature are impermanent. So a deep state of samadhi can be transformative in the moment. It can linger with us for a while afterwards, and over time that becomes a more natural state of being rather than being agitated and restless. But we can have a calmer mind and still be very unclear about the nature of the self and other, about reality. And so Buddhist practice and meditation in particular is not just based in those elements, but is directly helping us to cultivate those different aspects. And so the koan in the Zen tradition is a kind of extraordinary way of bringing in those elements. They do necessitate a certain calmness and stability of mind, concentration, which in the beginning is really what meditation practice is mostly about, is developing concentration. But in order to do that, we have to deal with the house, to the degree that it's not cleaned up or that we've made messes in the past, and those arise as difficult emotions and memories and so on, our karma. But in the beginning, it's not an inquiry practice. We're not sitting with the breath trying to see into the nature of mind in a conscious way. We are there to see into the nature of our thoughts that arise and go, strong emotional states that come and go. So we're seeing into the impermanence of things. The koan takes up the merging of those three elements and brings them into a kind of a laser-sharp focus through an unusual way, given Buddhism's understanding of how caught we are in language. That promise you are, even begin to speak and it scatters back into ruins. Right? How we get lost and confused by our language. We can name something and therefore we must know it. We live in a conceptual world of our own making. And here the koan uses the very stuff of that, you know, confusion, language, to help us go beyond and clarify the nature of things. And so it really, the power of it is not just so much in the words, although the words are important, and each koan presents a kind of a world, a universe to the student that they are asked to enter into completely in their mind, which means to leave their own self ideas and thoughts and imaginations behind, and to not sit there and think about it. And so that's why it requires some concentration. And so here in this koan, Master Yumen, who is a very prominent and important teacher in the Zen tradition, a Chinese master, was asked a question by a student. The light serenely shines over the whole universe. And Yunmen says, wasn't that Zhang Zhou's poem, a well-known poem written by somebody else? And the student says, yes. Yunmen says, you've missed it. So what the Buddha realized, I spoke about this on Friday night, is that what we seek ultimately, not only is it not outside, but we've never been apart from it. And then we're encouraged to have faith in that. And we can have faith in it and not believe it at the same time. We can want to believe it and not believe it at the same time. We can certainly believe and have faith in it and act against that at the same time. That's essentially inevitable, right? Because belief is not enough, but it's a start. And so the teachings that are trying to help us cultivate faith in Buddha nature, could it be so that I actually am of the nature, my mind, my body, of a Buddha, of an awakened being? It's not something I can construct. It's not something that somebody can give to me, but there is something I need to do. And so that's really just another way of saying it's not going to come from the outside. Not because I am not smart enough or have not looked far and wide enough, but because it's just not that. Each of us who is sitting in this hall, and those of you who are joining us from wherever you are this morning, has brought ourselves here to this moment. And that's a really important truth. We have to bring ourselves to the path. You know, you can't make someone sit. Sometimes you may not be able to make yourself sit. Right? You may be able to put yourself on the cushion, but not do zazen. We have to bring ourselves to it. That's really essential, and it's particularly because of the very nature of what we're trying to do. It's not outside. So if I want to discover something which is not going to be easy to discover, but is there, here, and I want that, I have to bring myself to that path. And not just once, over and over and over again. The seeking mind has to come from within. Somebody can suggest that you explore meditation. It would be really good for you, they say, right? Or you should come to this retreat. It might really be good for you. And that might be true. But you have to come. Even when everything is fine, for a seeker, we have begun to realize everything is fine and something is not fine. We begin to see that I should not accept what should not be accepted. I mean, that's part of our brilliance, is to adapt and evolve and accommodate and be able to live. I mean, I always thought, moved to the Arctic or Siberia, I thought, this is a great place to live. Let's settle down here. And people adapt and live in all kinds of places. But we can also, that can be our trap, because we accept what we should not accept. And then we see that when everything is not fine, through practice, you are fine. Accepting what has not yet been accepted. We call that Buddha nature. So Yunmen lived in the 9th and early 10th century, and he studied with a teacher named Mu Zhao. He studied with a couple of teachers. But when he came to Mu Zhao, whenever Mu Zhao saw him coming, he would close his door. Yunmen would knock on the door, and Mu Zhao would say, "Who is it?" And Yunmen would say, "It's me." Mu Zhao would say, "What do you want?" And Yunmen said, "I'm not clear about my life. I'd like the master to give me some instruction." And on one occasion, Mu Zhao opened the door and looked at Yunmen and then shuttered it in. And this happened several times. And so one time he opened the door, and as Mu Zhao went to close it, Yunmen stuck his foot in the door. And Mu Zhao shut it hard, and it said he broke his foot. And at that, Yunmen was enlightened. I read a scholar recently who, and I guess there are some scholars who think that some of these stories about these teachers, like a story like this, were actually created later and sort of placed into the narrative or the biography of these teachers, right? To create a very vivid sort of dynamic sense of the teachings and the training and how things were going. And whether that's true or not, it's not that really that important. Because it's this account is not something, you know, you get a friend to slam the door on your foot and you're gonna, it's not to try and replicate, it's just pointing to something, right? That moment of enlightenment came unexpectedly. I'm not clear about my life. There, he said it. He said it. To face this simple and profound truth and be able to just acknowledge that. And not see that as a weakness, but see that as a profound beginning of something. And that in acknowledging that, it's difficult to hold that, right? It can be difficult to hold that. That's why, we can hold on so tightly to things that seem to give us a sense of certainty and stability and, so we don't have to live with that uncertainty, that instability. And I think of it as something that we have to learn how to hold if we're going to do this. I mean, if we're going to do anything that isn't just something you pull off the shelf, sort of insert yourself into and then it carries you along, then we have to be willing to take responsibility for the unknown, the uncertainty of that. I've talked about when I wanted to be a monk, and I knew I wanted to do that, and I started to think about it. I thought, well, what if this place doesn't make it? In the early years, to me, it seemed like that was a real possibility. Well, what if my teacher dies? He was a heavy smoker. My dad was a heavy smoker. I thought, what if he dies or gets cancer, and I've given up everything to be here? Or what if I do this, and all of that goes well, but I'm just not a very good monk? I don't actually clarify anything. I don't ever come to peace. And I thought, I'll deal with those things. But if I don't do this because of those, I'll live for the rest of my life regretting that I acted out of that fear, those imagined possibilities. And so to face the uncertainty and the confusion is something that we have to learn how to hold. And Zazen is exquisitely given to us to learn how to do that. The poem that the student is reciting was a well-known poem. Yunmen knew who had written it, obviously. The student knew who had written it, so what's going on? The light serenely shines over the whole universe. Ignorant, wise, and living creatures, all are in my abode. In the morning service, we chanted, "The absolute light, luminous throughout the whole universe, unfathomable excellence pervading everywhere." And light is often presented, and not just in Buddhism, as something spiritual, transcendent. But this light is not something that we see with our eyes. We're not trying to create an experience, a sensation of light in our mind. It's the bright, clear mind of Buddha. It's the complete and perfect body of Buddha. It's the Buddha's saying, "Between heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one." A light that serenely shines. Here there's no boundary, no division, no high and low, superior, inferior. Each person, each dharma is self-fulfilling. self-fulfilled and self-fulfilling before any action is taken. That's why in Buddhism, there's no question or debate, are you worthy for this? Sometimes students themselves will ask that question or have answered it, no, I'm not. I'm not worthy to practice Dharma, or I'm not worthy to become a student or to take Jhikkhaya, the precepts, or to be ordained or to be enlightened. That may be their debate, but it's never been a debate in Buddhism, because the Buddha essentially laid that question to rest. How could we not be worthy of realizing something that is already our nature? The way is perfect like vast space, no excess, no lack. So this light is presented in all these different ways for us to try and again begin to try and hold in our mind, how could that be? And so the teachings draw on experiences, ordinary experiences of light, of sky, of space, of boundless oceans. Goes on, when no thought arises, the whole is fully revealed. If the six organs move even a little, it is obstructed by clouds. And this is what Buddhism calls delusion. There's no problem with our six organs, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. There's no problem with the objects that those sensory organs come into contact with. There's nothing wrong with our consciousness. Everything is fine. It's the clouds. It's really the sense of clouds. That's why the image of clouds obscuring the luminosity of the sun. We know the sun is there, but we can't see it. But even when there are clouds, there's still illumination, right? Even on the darkest cloudy day, you can still see. And so that analogy of how we can be obstructed by clouds and yet nothing actually is absent. The sense organs move and create a sense of something out there being experienced by someone in here. That's what we call the self. And out there, it seems clearly separate and distinct. It's out there. I look at you, well, you're not me. I look at a wall or a bell or a car or it's not me. And so when we talk about the same nature, it's the nature of each and everything. Like ocean, giving rise to waves. But once we establish an out there and an in here, well, now the lines are drawn. Borders have been established. There's a mine, and there's yours. Now, what are we going to do about that? And our hunger for something whole and complete becomes, from a Buddhist perspective, a misplaced, a misconstrued hunger for more. For more. Of what? Whatever you want. Whatever you think. Whatever we've been told will make us whole. The fact that no one has ever arrived there, no one has ever succeeded, doesn't seem to deter us. Kind of strange for a species that sort of bases its wisdom on experience. So there's our capacity to just ignore the evidence. And yet there are moments, strangely, in which we might have a moment unasked for, you might say by grace, by accident, by some inner turning, in which we have some experience that everything is whole, that everything is woven together, that somehow everything is interconnected, interdependent. What is that? You didn't make it happen, but there it is. And then it passes. And so it's like a glimpse. It's like a light through a crack in the door. Something. A sense of something that we seek, that we feel is a kind of profound healing, but we can't hold on to it, and we can't create it. And even in Buddhist practice, we can't create it, but we can open that door wide. So in a sense, it still will never be known. You cannot grasp it. But it's now not an accident. goes on, if you cut off your ignorance, your ailment will increase. If you look for the truth, you're also in the wrong. So this presents the tension in practice. So coming to seek, if I want to be free, and I see that my delusion, my confusion, my overpowering emotions are what's binding me, I want to cut them off. I want to stop those things, extinguish them, get rid of them. And yet it says, if I try to do that, my sickness will only increase. Because that's just drawing another border. It's the same thing, but just now with a little bit of a Buddhist scent or flavor. In other words, we can't get away. If you look for the truth, it says, then you're also in the wrong. This is just more turning away from the whole. We can't get close. We can't get away, but we can't get close. So this morning we chanted, it's not near, it's not far. But if we're deluded, it seems like we're mountains and rivers away from it. So then our seeking makes sense, right? If it was here already, then my life should show that. So it must be somewhere else. Thus, the cultivation of faith. And then it ends, living in accordance with worldly affairs, you will now have no obstructions. Nirvana and life and death are like colors in a dream. There is no wall, no barrier, no conflict until we create them. To finally see that all are in my abode. When there is discord, when there is conflict, where is that? All are in my abode means everything in heaven and everything in hell. It means every hell being and every heavenly being. So think of it like the human body. You have toes and ankles and calves and knees and thighs and all the way up, eyes, ears, head. You may like some parts over others. You may favor some over others. You may wish this was straight or this was curved or this was thin or round or this was short or tall. But each part itself is at peace with itself and with the whole. Blood doesn't get angry at the heart. Lungs don't get angry at a congested nose. Your myopic eyes aren't jealous of your ears that hear so fine. Nirvana and life and death are like colors in a dream. Something is there, but what is it? And so this student brings this poem, and Yunmen said, isn't that the poem of Chang Cho? She says, yes. Yunmen says, you've missed it. Another translation said, had Yunmen's response, exactly, you've got it all wrong. And then this later teacher says, now tell me, why has she missed it? As I said before, it is Chang Cho's poem. Student knows this. Yunmen knows this. What has been missed? What has been gotten wrong? Shibuyama, in his commentary on this, says, the light serenely shines over the whole universe. It is just so, ever clear, true. How can there be any vain argument of now and then, of missing it and not missing it? Let me warn you, however, don't be so careless as to just swallow it blindly. In other words, don't be so careless as to say, well, Zen is beyond all duality. There is no high and low. There is no having and not having. That's good for me. Is that good for you? And he's saying, don't fall into that. It's just another idea. That doesn't change anybody's life. How can there be any argument? He says, vain in Buddhism usually is referring to just self-clinging. How can there be any self-clinging? And so it seems like the koan, Yunmen, is inviting conflict and creating an argument. Sometimes in practice, when we begin sitting, it can seem like things are getting worse. Sometimes students will like say, I'm sitting, but like everything's getting harder and worse. And it's like, no, you're actually just seeing more clearly. It's not so obscure. And so in practice, we basically witness the dukkha that's already been present, that's been present all along. The conflicts now are more vivid, closer. We which in a way is harder, but we have a practice to not indulge, not hold on, not try and get away from. And so it said, the teacher seeing a cage will build a cage. Seeing a fire will fan the flames so that the student can see there's a way through. Mujo closes the door on Yunmen. Go away. He's a teacher. He's taken a vow to teach anyone who comes. That's one of the functions of the Guardian Council. The teacher takes a vow to teach anybody who asks. But sometimes a student or potential student may need more preparation, more clarification. Sometimes this may not actually be the right practice for them. And so the part of the Guardian Council's role is to help discern that. So Mujo closes the door on Yunmen. In a way, he's saying, can your self-clinging mind endure this insult? Is what you're seeking more important than being uncomfortable? Can you tolerate not getting what you want? Can you let go of what you think you need and encounter what will really help you? Once a student asked Master Yunmen, what is Zen? Yunmen said, yes. The student says, what is Tao? What is the way? And Yunmen said, attain. He was known for these very pithy responses, often one word, yes. Why wait any longer? We had a monk once from Japan who went in for the first time to Dokusan with Dadaroshi. And he told me later when Dadaroshi said, what is your practice? The monk said, yes. And I said, that is the most excellent practice. Everyone's tried, still trying, to solve the problem through our basic habits, aversion and denial, grasping and holding, which is just different ways of trying to control reality. I know the reality that would be my perfect heaven. I just haven't gotten there yet. And you guys keep getting in the way. And the Buddha said, we will never find our way. Because that's just a big fat no. But a very different no than we were chanting in the Heart Sutra. That no is a big fat yes. By saying every time you try and solidify, attach to, deny, avoid, control, manage any aspect of reality, you meet a no. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's not going to help you. And that becomes yes. Because that is not living in accordance with worldly affairs. And so we sit on this cushion and face reality. Not the one you want, not the one you came here sure you were going to find. And be able to go home and write a big, glorious story about it and tell the world, which has happened. We had somebody who come for a month of residency during a college break, lasted a week or so, left, and then wrote a long article in the school newspaper about this glorious experience they had at the Zen monastery. It wasn't glorious. She didn't leave because it was glorious. She left because it was hard. It wasn't what she expected, which is fine. That's not unusual. But she had to turn it into something else. And then strangely send it to us. I thought, I don't know what to call that. Chutzpah or... There's a story in a sutra where the Buddha is talking to a ruler, somebody with a lot of power, and says, Your Majesty, as for your experience of having political power, this has no evident limit. This was a ruler of all rulers, a ruler of all worlds. And he says, For your Majesty, the senses are like illusions, unsatisfactory and unsatisfiable. Objects are like dreams, not able to satisfy you, not able to make you content. And then he tells the story of another king who actually was the ruler of the whole world, the King of Kings, who fell from heaven, who fell. And so that's what Buddhism teaches, is even people who live in godly realms, they have everything. They have the power, they have the wealth, they have everything they need. Their delusion is thinking that that's who they are, that they're in control of that. And so ultimately they fall. Their karma and all of the things that they tend to do with that power that hurt other people and cause harmful karma end up causing them to fall back into a lower realm of existence. And so the sutra tells a story of this king, Anantayasas, who was such a king and sunk down and was sinking literally through the ground down into the hell realm. And the other kings gathered around and said, what should we say? How should we tell the people what happened? And he said, tell them that King Anantayasas exercised royal sovereignty over all four continents, that he experienced all his vain desires, that he had the fruits of every tree out of season and relief from every bodily distress, and that he fulfilled all the vain desires of all sentient beings, and that he experienced the rain of scented water, the rain of whatever divine clothes he wanted, the rain of jewels, the rain of gold, the rain of precious substances, and the rain of all valuable things, and that after he lived in and reigned over all four continents and sat with all of the heavenly beings on his throne, he died without letting go of intense desire and was not satisfied. Tell them that. He's saying, I took this as far as it's possible to take it. There was nothing more that I could have desired and had. And I died without satisfaction. A student once asked Master Yuman, how should I act during every hour of the day to be in alignment with the teachings and the ancestors? And Yuman said, give up your effort. And the student said, how should I give up my effort? And Yuman said, give up the words you just spoke. Let go of the idea. Let go of the effort that is binding you. Don't try to find peace through conflict or unity through division or clarity through confusion. The Buddha said this in an early sutra. He said he realized at a certain point that he kept going to the sources of his suffering to try and be free of it. And he finally realized that's never going to work. And so Yunmen brings that tension, that very tension to the student to bring it out for them. So to be in the koan, you have to be the student. You're studying with this great master. Maybe you've traveled halfway across the country to get there. You've done everything you could to gain entrance, to be able to meet this teacher and ask this question. You've been thinking about it. You've memorized the poem. You realize how profound it is. You've brought it now to the teacher's presence. You ask the questions with confidence, maybe with a little bit of pride. And before you've even gotten the first line out, this great teacher says, isn't that the poem of Changzhou? And you say, yes. And Yuma says, you've missed it. Exactly, you are wrong. Now, what do you do? Where are you? Where do you find yourself? What's going on in your mind? That's exactly what Yunmen wanted to bring this student to. Back home. What does it mean to make something your own? We tend to think of it, I have to possess it, I appropriate it, I refashion it into my own likeness, or make it conform with my desires. And that works well in certain things. You're going to make a meal, make it the way you want. So it's delicious to you. You put on clothes, put on the clothes you want. So you feel good in those clothes. But nature's not like that. Dharma training is like that. It's a different kind, a different level of pleasure, in fact. The Buddha acknowledged all the ordinary, everyday pleasure that we had. He said, that's good, that's fine. It's temporary, it doesn't go that deep. It doesn't resolve the fundamental matter. There's a much greater pleasure. So this is a wisdom tradition passed over all of these centuries through the minds and hearts and practices. It got to us today through people doing exactly what we've been doing all weekend. But how do we know? How do you know as a practitioner if it's true Dharma that you're practicing? How do you know if you haven't gone off on some wild goose chase? How do you know if you're not deceiving yourself in practice? Just creating more of the same. Well, is the practice you're doing illuminating you to the cause of your suffering and showing you more and more how that shows up in all different kinds of ways you never imagined? Is it something that you can practice with your thoughts, words, and actions? Is it something that you are practicing? When you practice, is what you're doing actually in accordance with the teachings when you go and study the teachings? Are they aligning? Do you see your attachments, your strong emotions, your confusion, reactivity over time, because patience is necessary, but do you see those shifting, calming, dissolving? Is your mindfulness helping you to have moments, and increasingly, moments of simple satisfaction and contentment? Do you find yourself looking less outside, more able to take responsibility, freaking out a little bit less when somebody criticizes you, able to hold the distress of the world a little bit easier, or to not hold it so tightly for so long? Do you more and more and over time understand directly and ultimately experientially the light serenely shines over the whole universe? All are in my abode. And so we practice with faith that not only are the teachings true and this is possible, but it's possible for you. You are such a person. We don't shy away from uncertainty and not knowing and doubt, but actually realize it's an essential part of the practice because there's a lot of energy in that. And we persevere. You keep showing up. You're patient. Be patient. Even a trickling stream will find its way to the ocean. Cast a hook into such wild cascades, and whoever's greedy will take the bait. You know, when we're distracted and distant and sort of at the mercy of our thoughts and emotions, it's very easy. We're very vulnerable to outside influences. Right? It's easy. You just throw out any kind of hook and it lands somewhere. But the more grounded we become, the more mindful we are, the more all of those volatile elements within ourselves begin to naturally calm, as they will. Those hooks tend to just drop off, or they hook, but they don't go very deep. We realize, we see how, you know, easy it is that the one who has wealth, who has strength, who has power, control, who has the loudest voice, the strongest opinion, we think they must know what's going on. They must know the truth. And we realize, no. From a Buddhist perspective, that's a very weak power because it's so external. It's not about the person. And it's unfortunate that being such a weak power, it has such devastating effects. That promise that you are, the poem says, a promise sincerely made is just a different way of saying a commitment needs to be fulfilled. So in that same sutra, the Buddha says, speaking to the person of great power, says, Your Majesty, with what should you become emotionally involved? How should you hold yourself? What should you aspire to? What should you give your faith to and your energy? And then the Buddha says, this is how you should think. For the world, including all the gods and demons, may I become an eye, E-Y-E. May I become a torch, a lamp, and a light. May I become a shore, a landing place for boats. May I become a guide, a leader, a teacher, a leader of caravans. May I swiftly go ahead. And once I am free, may I set others free. And once I have courage, may I give courage to others? May I give fearlessness to others? This is how you should think. Which is just a different way of saying, this is who you are. So how do we live this life? The Buddha said, live it by freeing your body and mind of self and others. That's the life we've been looking for. That's the life that has been verified over and over to be free and unhindered and large and generous. So for those of you particularly who came for the weekend, I hope we gave you nothing and you leave with plenty. And that in some ways that this is helping you in your journey in this life and to have some sense of how to step forward. That's the important thing. Dogen said that the way will not present itself unless we step forward. So we have to step forward. Right? It's important to keep the ground under your feet. Nobody knows what happens next, right? You don't have to be a prophet or predictor of the future. Just tomorrow you'll wake up. What about today? What about tomorrow? What about this day? You know where we are? We have a seat for you if you'd like to come back. Wherever you go, there's a seat there for you as well. I'll finish with a few words. The light serenely shines all the way down to color's inner dream. If you want to make it personal, just let go of person and the remainder without forsaking a single thread. Don't worry about being dispossessed. Those are the ghosts of yesterday. Empty-handed, nothing remains but yes. Yes.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.